It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hey, guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic. When I can, I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's time to talk Pac-12 football. This is the Pac-12 Insider here on ESPN 700. The Pac-12 Insider is presented by Les Olson IT. Now for the latest on Pac-12 football, here's the Pac-12 Insider here on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
I have Evan Moore joining us here on the Pac-12 Insider momentarily. Pac-12 Insider here on the Bill Riley Show. Just a reminder, Utah returns to the field today for spring football. We'll have sound for you later today. We'll get to watch a little bit of the end of practice today and take some of that in and then do some interviews afterwards. Offensive guys are who we'll talk to today. I'm planning on trying to talk to Brandon Rose, quarterback, and maybe talk to one of the linemen. I think Jaron Kump's an interesting guy to talk to because Kump's a guy that they love. They just have to find a place to put him because Utah's offensive line has been so deep, but I know he's gotten some snaps at center. So I'll talk to Jaron Kump a little bit today and then maybe catch up with Thomas Yasmin, the guy that will be tight end one. Dalton Kincaid will be drafted here in the next couple of weeks, very high in the draft, somewhere in the first round. And Yasmin's got a chance to be the next, you know, great or meaningful Utah tight end. So we'll see what Thomas has to say today. He's always a colorful chap to talk to. So those will be some of the folks I talk to today up at practice, and then we'll have some of that sound posted for you a little bit later on up at ESPN700sports.com. That's ESPN700sports.com. Couple of reminders for you. First and foremost, Utah Women's Gymnastics from the NCAA Regionals coming up Thursday afternoon right here at 3 o'clock on ESPN 700. Mike Lagesholt, Kendall Pond will be there with the broadcast. Then if they advance, which everybody fully expects them to advance, they'll be back in action on Saturday night. And then we'll have three baseball games, weather permitting. You never know this time of year, but scheduled to have the USC series Friday night on ESPN 700, Saturday night on 92.1 FM, and Sunday night on ESPN 700 for the broadcast of Utah baseball. They got swept by Stanford. They competed well, but they got swept by the Cardinal at the Sunken Diamond at Palo Alto the other day. So we'll see if they get back into it here very soon. So we'll talk to those guys. We'll talk a little baseball and stuff coming up as well here on ESPN 700 along with some of the other things that are going on. Lynn Roberts is scheduled to join us as well. So we'll have Lynn coming up and have that all on the way right here on Utah's number one sports talk. If you want to reach the program, you can certainly do so. 877-353-0700. 877-353-0700 is your telephone number and text number to reach the program. A couple of thoughts from listeners on my Blue Blood conversation. This text says, it's worth noting that many of those claimed national championships are less legitimate than Utah's 04 and 08, but they're still awarded as national championships. You know, you can say they're not legitimate, but they were. That's what they awarded back in those days. It's kind of like we recognize World Series championships and home run titles from the old days of baseball before black players and minority players were really allowed to play in Major League Baseball, but we still count all those. The league was just different. College football was just different back then, but they were still, you know, perceived championships. So there you go. Text message. I'll play along, Bill. How about West Coast Blue Bloods? USC, Washington, UCLA, Blue Bloods, New Bloods, Oregon, and Utah on the way. That's not bad if we're talking about Pac-12. Yeah, let me sit down and think about that one, the West Coast Blue Bloods in college football. Evan Moore joining us right now from the Pac-12 Network, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, and, of course, the mayor of Newport Beach, California. How are you, Ev?
I love the intro, Bill. Thank you. I'm great. It's good to talk to you, man. We've just spent it's funny to hear you talk football because we've just spent so much time talking and rightfully so about basketball, the NCAA tournament, Pac-12 hoops. Yesterday on our show in the morning, Guy and I got into some football and some questions about each team going into the spring. Maybe some answers we'll get from the spring, even though spring football is now, I guess, like top secret CIA type stuff these days, and no one opens their practices anymore. But I'm excited that, you know, we're back to talking about football. It hasn't even been that long since last season ended, but it's good to be talking about it.
Well, we get to see 20-25 minutes of the end of practice with Utah football, which means we get to probably see 2 minutes and stuff like that, which is okay. Yeah. All right, so what did you determine was I'm not going to count Cam Rising because that's the obvious for Utah. He's on track to recover. They expect to have him back during fall camp at some point in time, unless there's a setback. Removing Cam Rising from the equation, what was your question about Utah football?
Well, it was less a question for me with Utah, and it was more about look, and I hate to be, I don't want this to be a negative thing. I just believe it to be true. Is that I think anytime you go through a season with as much as you put on the shoulders of Cam Rising and the way Cam Rising plays, like we saw last year, if you go through a 12, 13 game season and Cam is generally healthy and plays in every single game, I think you should probably consider yourself lucky. And I'm not saying that I think Cam is injury prone by any means. I just think with the style of football that Cam plays, you have to expect Cam to be nicked up at some point. And the continuing to solidify that backup quarterback position, like I'm sure you've talked about many times, for Utah football is extremely important. Because had they gone up, and I'm not saying they won this game just because of the quarterback last year when they went up to Pullman, but had they gone up to Pullman and lost that game that, you know, Cam Rising was a late scratch in, you know, we're not talking about Utah getting a chance to play in the conference championship game and go into a Rose Bowl and, you know, doing all the things they did towards the end of the year. Like, we're not having that conversation. And so I think just continuing to establish depth at that position, I know there's some new names as well, I think that's going to be a really, really important thing for them. Now, he's obviously going to have some weapons to work with. I mean, the return of Brant Keithy is going to be fantastic, but I'm not sure what his health situation is going to be during the spring. I'm talking about now as we get into the fall. That's obviously going to be a great thing for them, right? With other names going out the door as well. So that probably is the biggest for me. And you know, while I do expect Cam when the season rolls around to be healthy, and I hope he plays in every single game and is generally healthy all year long, it just seems to me that Utah, you know, I think Kyle Whittingham probably knows this too, is you just got to be smart and have guys ready because there might be a game or two he misses here and there because of the style of football he plays and what's on his shoulders. And you got to be ready to be able to withstand that because that's why they were so good last year. It's why they ended up with a conference championship.
Well, that's what they're trying to find out this spring, Ev. I mean, that's really what they're trying to do. That, you know, Bryson Barnes, who's been kind of the steady Eddie guy and bailed him out of Wazoo, he's not getting a ton of reps this spring because they kind of feel like they know what they have in him. They know he's a steady guy. He's probably hit his ceiling a little bit, but they're testing out the two freshmen, the two four-star freshmen, Brandon Rose and Nate Johnson, and trying to see what they have in those two guys. Rose was the scout team quarterback last year, so he got actual football reps in practice against the Utah defense. You know, Nate Johnson got limited. You know, third-string quarterbacks don't see very many reps anywhere, and he had his little package he'd go into the games with, but I think this spring, they've got Bryson. They say, okay, we know what we've got in Bryson Barnes. But first of all, do we have our number two guy here that can back Cam Rising up this fall? But more importantly, do we have a guy in the program right now that is the guy a year from now? When Cam Rising's hopefully in an NFL camp or getting ready for the draft next year, do we have our heir apparent? Because if we don't, we need to know that.
Yeah, and look, I mean, as we know, those solutions, if the answer is no – quick fix solutions are, you know, in today's world of college football, they're out there, right? And I would imagine, you know, in the days where once Cam Rising leaves the program after next season, I would imagine, you know, if that guy's not there, that Utah is going to be a very attractive place for a lot of quality options out in college that would want to transfer that. I don't think there's any question about that. But one quick note, too, on Cam, you know, I would always be hesitant if I were a coach to ever change the way Cam plays, right? I love the way Cam plays, and I think it's a huge asset to that team. If he continues to be who he is, they're going to be just fine. That being said, I think it's interesting to look at Michael Penix's career, because when Michael Penix, and again, he and Cam are different players, but I think there's a parallel here with regard to injury. He and Cam, or I should say, when he came from Indiana, he had yet to play in a season more than six games, so he was highly injury prone, and I think a lot of it we saw this year. Now, granted, on the offensive line, they were really good, and Michael Penix barely got touched for most of the season. That certainly helps. But I think as a quarterback, you become more intelligent over the course of your career on what hits are worth the squeeze, what hits are worth the squeeze and what hits aren't, right? And I don't think Cam is reckless per se, and I think Cam's role as the quarterback of Utah is quite a bit different than what they ask of Michael Penix, but I wouldn't be surprised this year to see Cam take another step in that area and just being a bit smarter in certain situations and not necessarily putting himself in harm's way unless it's absolutely necessary, because I do think Utah is going to be able to protect him as well, which is going to be important. So I think Michael Penix took a big step in that direction. I'm surprised he's still in college. I think he did enough last year to make himself a pretty high draft pick. And I think Cam can also do the same while also, just recognizing that they're quite a bit different players too.
All right, let's pop around the league. Let's just do quick hitters. Washington, you just mentioned Washington. What was a question you had about the Huskies? They to me, Evan, are the team I think is the biggest challenger to Utah. And I know a lot of people love SC, yeah, but I thought they were more balanced with offense and defense. I've just got to see the improvement with SC's defense. But what was your question about the Huskies?
So obviously with the Huskies, what they have coming back offensively makes them one of the most entertaining teams in America to watch, right? I mean, the style of football they play offensively with Michael Penix's ability to spin it and throw it down the field, I think a high point for them last year was certainly against Washington State. I mean, he made it look so easy. And Jalen McMillan, Roma Dunze, I mean, these are fantastic players at receiver. It's kind of pick your poison, right? I mean, it's kind of an NFL offense in a lot of ways with that kind of talent out at receiver. So that is going to be fun to watch again, and it's why I think they'll be a favorite for a lot of people around the conference. Now, the issue I think that popped up with them at times last year, and I think sometimes it was because of, they were having some struggles with injury in the secondary, but the secondary for Washington historically obviously has been a place that has generated a lot of high draft picks. And anytime you watch the Huskies play, even in an era like with Jimmy Lake where they were struggling, they still had quality players in the secondary. And last year, they had some injuries and they had some inexperience that was forced to be on the field. And it showed up and was kind of an issue for them at times and something we weren't used to seeing with Washington. So I'm curious to see, especially in the back half of the defense, if they can get back to what we've always kind of identified as, which probably isn't the right way to look at it because it's a different coach. It's kind of a new era, so to speak, for Washington football. But as well as they throw it around, as well as they sling the rock, as many points as I think they're going to score, I do think getting that side right on the back half is important to Kalen DeBoer. And I think they'll spend the spring trying to continue to establish that to make it not make it a weakness going into next season.
Is SC going to be as dynamic offensively this year without Dye and without Addison and some of those guys? You think they'll be just as dynamic? And what do they have to? Where do they have to be better on defense?
Yeah, so I think the answer to your first question is yes. I think Caleb Williams is the best player in college football. And when you have the best player in college football with his hands on the ball every single play, and you've got a coach that does a hell of a job scheming offensively, and we'll get to defense in a sec, but does a hell of a job scheming offensively, and each game plan each week is loaded with plays that are a problem for defenses. Yes. Look, I mean, Jordan Addison's a great player. But Jordan Addison wasn't at full strength for the better part of the year. And, in fact, the games he was out, the games that Mario Williams was out, what did Caleb Williams do? He built a rapport with the other three receivers. Michael Jackson III, and I know Kyle Ford's not in the program anymore, but all of a sudden all these other guys started popping up. Why? Because, like all the great players in the NFL, they lift the play of those around them. And I think Caleb Williams has the ability to do that. And as long as he's got athletes that are more than capable, maybe they're not superstars, but I think he can lift the play of those around him, like we've seen Aaron Rodgers do for the better part of his career, right? And I think Caleb is capable of that. On the defensive side of the ball, I think it comes down to the front seven. This team last year was atrocious tackling, and they were able to cover it up, and I got to give them credit because they emphasized it and they did it well. They were able to cover it up for a better part of last year due to takeaways. And Alex Grinch deserves some credit for that because everywhere he's been, they've taken the ball away. But you knew as the season went on that would slow down a little bit, and it did. And when it did, the tackling got exposed. The depth of the defense got exposed. quite frankly, I thought there was one player on that side of the ball that was a true NFL player, and he's gone. That's Tuli Tuipulotu. He's going to the NFL draft. So is Shane Lee an NFL player? We'll see, right? He's got to further establish himself this year. And there are other names on that defense that need to step up and develop, because from what I've heard so far, you know, it's not like the portal, like players are flocking to play defense for USC right now. And so I'm really anxious to see if they can shore up that side of the ball, because look, as good as they are defensively, and I realize they were a win or two away from the CFP last year, so I want to give them credit, but there's always going to be a ceiling on what they're really capable of, even if they make the college football playoff. You know, are they really capable of winning a national championship if they can't defend better? And I think those questions go back to Lincoln's days at Oklahoma as well, right? He made it. He got through the Big 12. But when he got there, he didn't fare very well. And so I really want to see them shore up that side of the football, because I don't think they'll ever really get over the hump and compete for a national title until they do.
Who are you a bigger believer in now, Oregon or Oregon State for next year?
Gosh, that's a really good question. When you say believer, I'm gonna take that to mean, like, who do I think has a better chance of winning the conference between the two teams? And one of my biggest questions going into the spring for the entire conference, like the first one I went to yesterday on our show, was Oregon State, because I think Oregon State defensively and up front, offensively and in their run game, is a championship football team. And it has felt like, and I know a lot of people feel this way, that they are a quarterback away from being kind of getting over that hump and really competing for a conference title. And look, DJ Uiagalelei had crazy, crazy high expectations on him at Clemson. I think the general sentiment for people that maybe haven't looked at his numbers or watched him play much at Clemson was that it didn't work out. It wasn't what they, you know, he's leaving for a reason. It wasn't what they thought he was. He's out of there. No, DJ was still a hell of a player at Clemson. They put a lot on his plate. And I don't think Jonathan Smith at Oregon State is going to put nearly as much on his plate. I think it's going to be more complementary football. And he's obviously a big, tough guy, and I think he's going to be able to, you know, help him out in the run game too. And if he can develop this offseason under Jonathan Smith in that offense and be the guy that I think a lot of us hope he can be, then I think I've got more – so I'm kind of – it's kind of a conditional statement here. I've probably got more belief at this point in Jonathan Smith and in the Oregon State program that he's building. I think Dan Lanning's got a ton of talent. I think last year – while doing some good things as a coach, I think he made some mistakes that you can probably chalk up to inexperience. You know, the one against Washington and going for it on fourth down with a backup quarterback in the game on your own 30-yard line, like, that never, ever, ever makes sense. And I've heard people try to justify it. I can't even listen to the excuses. And that cost him the game. And so when I put coaching, when I put scheme, and what I saw last year and what I think will translate to this year, and the fact, by the way, that I think they've got – probably the best running back in the conference going into next season in Damian Martinez. I lean the Beavers. I think the Beavers are going to be right there. And if DJU can take care of the ball and take advantage of explosive opportunities when he gets them, this is going to be a really dangerous team next year.
Coach Prime's apparently going to wear a tank top on the sideline next year, which should be an interesting look in Boulder, Colorado. We'll see if he does that.
I hadn't heard that yet.
He said he's getting in shape, so he can wear a tank top on the sideline next year. We'll see if he does that in December or November when the Utes play, whatever that might be. What's your expectation? I know they have done a wonderful job marketing. There's no downside to this hire for Colorado, because the Colorado brand was dead everywhere, even in Colorado. So that part of it's good. But just purely from a football standpoint, I've heard people trying to draw comparisons between what Lincoln Riley did at SC last year and Coach Prime at Colorado, and I tell them to pump the brakes there. But what do you see in year one of the Prime era?
Well, to your point about the USC comparisons, I agree. I would say no chance. But at the same time, like, his son Shador at the quarterback position, like, I'm not nearly as familiar with him as I was with Caleb Williams, but I think there's a reason for that. He's not Caleb Williams, but – how good is he? We don't know, right? I'll tell you this. I do agree with you. The hire was a win. That's proven, at least thus far, to be true. They have certainly won the offseason. They've recruited incredibly well. When you combine their transfer class with their incoming high school signees, it's been pretty much as good as you could ask for any coach that filled that position. And so that's why I argue that so far this was a smashing success so far. And then I go to their schedule. And I look at opening with, you know, not, I shouldn't say defending national champs, but defending CFP participant, TCU. And then they play the Matt Rhule-led Nebraska Cornhuskers, and I guarantee you Nebraska is going to be a better team. I've got a ton of respect for Matt Rhule. I think he's a fantastic coach, despite what went down in Carolina. He is a really, really good college coach. I covered him four times, and he was at Baylor. And then Colorado State, Oregon, USC, and ASU. It's sort of, in some ways, kind of murderer's row with some of the teams they'll face early. I mean, they could start the season 2-4 easily. Now, that doesn't mean that that doesn't mean that it's a failure. And what I'm getting at here is, like, I think people need to be careful about measuring them by the way the first six games look, because this is going to be a project. This was one of the worst teams in all of Power Five football last year, right? So we have to remember that. But what I hope to see, and we're not going to see a ton of it in the spring. Obviously, we'll see a lot of the marketing, the excitement, and throughout training camp. But in that first game against TCU, what you hope to see, because remember, this team also played TCU last year, and it was close at halftime and just destroyed in the second half. And I'm just really interested to see if we can see noticeable improvement in the areas that matter the most. Like, there's been a lot of noise from Colorado, which is great, right? A lot of flash and flare and recruiting. But I'm anxious to see, like, and I do believe Coach Prime, there's substance here, because if you look at what he accomplished, Jackson State, right? If you looked at what he accomplished at Jackson State prior, or was it Jacksonville? Which one is it, Bill? Why am I forgetting the name of his previous school?
Jackson State.
Yeah, Jackson State. If you look at what he accomplished there and the turnaround that he achieved there over a few years, like, it was real. Now, we'll see if it translates to Power Five football, but, like, you know, he's already accomplished something as a coach. This wasn't like a celebrity hire, in my opinion. I mean, this is real. This is a guy that wants to get down and get dirty and coach. And so from that standpoint, I want to see in all three phases just what this team looks like. How disciplined are they, right? Do they do all the little things right? Do they take care of the football? Are they a good tackling team? All those things that, like, really good coaches do when they come in and turn a program around, right, beyond just the stuff you see on social media. That's what I'm really anxious to see. And I don't really care if they beat TCU, but I want to just see, like, how do they compete against TCU? And how do they look like with all the fundamentals and all the little things? Because this team was way off with that stuff a year ago. And Prime knows he's got a ton of work to do. And so it's not about wins and losses. It's just, what does it look like when I turn the tape on and watch these games the first 6 weeks of the season?
Evan Moore with us for a moment or two more here on the Bill Riley Show today. Dalton Kincaid, next level. I think everybody sees him as a first-round draft choice. Thomas Yasmin, guy that had never even picked up an American football till 5 years ago, emerged last year due to the injury to Keithy and being the backup guy. You saw him. He really came on at the end of the year. He got some good feedback from some NFL folks that think he may have a future there. What did you see? Because you kind of played – you were a hybrid. You played a little receiver, a little tight end. What did you see from Yasmin last year, and what do you think could be his next step this year for Utah football?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I saw what everybody else saw, and that was a fantastic athlete. Really, what I saw was most of it after the catch.
Yeah.
That got me, where I'm like, oh, my goodness. I mean, there were some plays where he's hurdling guys and whatnot, and you got a glimpse – into what he's capable of. And now, granted, he's been part of a crowded room for the most part. And I realize Brandt, you know, moved to receiver, but, you know, and just if we just include him in the tight end group for now, I mean, it's been a crowded room for a while. And there's only so many balls to go around. I mean, Dalton was a volume receiver. I mean, getting the ball in his hands as much as possible was a priority. And so the natural progression for a guy like Thomas is, like, to take that next step and become more of a featured piece in an offense and be a guy that's regularly getting the football. Now, not all guys respond well to that. And I'm not doubting whether he will, but generally speaking, like, not all guys are ready for a feature position in an offense. And that's going to be the next step, you know, to some extent, that's going to be the next step that he'll have to take. Because Dalton Kincaid and Brandt Keithy have shown that, hey, you want to throw it to me 15 times a game, I'll catch 13 of them, right? I won't drop any. The others just might not be catchable, right? But I'm going to be able to make that play, and I want you to feed me, right? There are certain tight ends that we've seen in the Pac-12, Zach Ertz is another one, that kind of have that mentality. And it's not just as easy as saying, okay, this kid's shown that he's pretty good in the limited role, let's move him into a feature role and he'll get 80 catches a year or 60 catches a year in college. It doesn't always work that way. And so I'm sure the staff is now, you know, kind of gauging that and exploring, like, to what degree can we start to feature him more? Because, you know, not all guys are built that way. And so that's probably the thing I'm anxious to see with Yasmin is, how comfortable is he taking that next step and being more of a feature piece in this offense alongside another great receiving option in Brandt Keithy? Because if those guys are both comfortable doing that, like Kincaid and Keithy were, it's just going to be another, obviously, it's just another hell of a weapon for Utah's offense to use over the course of the year.
think you and I have talked about this last thing, but do you foresee a playoff representative out of the Pac-12 next year, just based on what schedules look like and the depth of talent in the league?
Yeah, I do. And quite frankly, I thought, you know, early last year, I thought we'd have one too, and I was wrong. So I'm not afraid to admit that. But if you look at, now you could make an argument the conference beats itself up, but if you look at SC, and I just addressed a couple of steps these teams have to take, but if you look at SC, what Oregon has coming back, what Oregon State could potentially be, what Washington is, what Utah is, it's a very deep conference with high-level quarterback play across the board. And when you have that, like, unfortunately, in this version of the playoff, yeah, you do worry that someone's going to just – that everyone's going to beat each other up. Everyone's going to have at least one loss in conference, maybe a non-conference loss, and there you go, no playoff, right, which sucks. And it's the last year we have to deal with that. But there's no reason for me to believe at this point that we can't get one team to get through this thing with only one loss and be a playoff participant. So that's I'm going to continue to stand by that.
I hope they can. I just worry about the gauntlet that is. Even in down years, it's tough with the nine conference games, and next year is not going to be a down year. So we'll see how it goes. Hey, thanks for coming on today. It's good catching up. Everything good with you?
Everything's great, Bill. Always enjoy talking to you, man. Good to hear your voice.
All right, thanks, Ev. We'll talk to you soon. That's Evan Moore with us here on the Bill Riley Show today.